Chronicles now transmitting.
Welcome to the Tate Chronicles on Healthcare Now Radio. And now, here's your host, Jim Tate.
Good day, citizens of the free world. From border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea, I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning into the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog and look for guidance and clarification at the leading edge of healthcare technology and processes. I'm very pleased today. My guest is Mr. Kirby from Vice President Operations at VisiQuate. Sean, I recently read a post of yours that addressed quite a few issues that made me really want to talk to you. So thanks for joining us this morning.
Jim, it is my pleasure. I'm a big fan, and I really appreciate your invitation and look forward to speaking to you today.
You know, one of the things at this really, in some ways, pivotal moment in healthcare delivery is due to the COVID-19 pandemic, many healthcare organizations were thrust into really a new reality with really no warning or preparation. A new normal has emerged, and we are somewhere in the transition to a new model of sustainability based on this new paradigm. So there's quite a few things I want to touch base with you about and get your thoughts on. The first is the whole issue. We can say it's focused on healthcare, but it really addresses many of the folks who are working from home or trying to do business from home, and that is remote workforce burnout. Now, in healthcare, this kind of existed even before COVID, because with EHRs, providers, when they left the office, didn't have access to their charts, but now with EHRs, they go home and after dinner, they sit down and still work for 2 or 3 hours. So there's a real tendency to not limit the work. So I'm curious about this whole issue of remote workforce burnout, specifically in healthcare.
Sure. You're absolutely right, though, Jim. It transcends even healthcare. But what we're seeing is there's no switch. There's no on and off switch like we used to have. Technology has enhanced our game. It's made us more productive. But in a sense, it's also created a 24-hour workday. It used to be nice when we could work 9 to 5, get in the car, go home, and turn off the switch. Get home, and you know, you had the landlines, et cetera, and you were cut off from work. But now with mobile phones, with tablets, with laptop computers, internet, you know, everywhere, there really is no on and off switch. So what we're finding is, just like you mentioned now, whether it's coding, whether it's AR follow-up, things were already in motion prior to the pandemic. And then once the pandemic hit, it was almost like 10 years worth of work from home initiatives and planning that we all thought would be a nice, easy transition with trial and error and all that. It happened in about 10 days. We went from 0 to 100 real quick. And I think that the result of that is, you know, folks who didn't have that experience working from home are now working odd hours. They're starting at 6, 7 o'clock in the morning. They're homeschooling their kids. They're doing the maintenance around the house. They're working until 7 o'clock, eating a little something, and then getting back online and finishing up the day. So it's, there really is no start and stop, I guess, is the thing. And that's leading to that burnout you're talking about.
You know, and another thing, probably just as large, but maybe was even more acute back in the early stages of the pandemic, whether it's a practice or a large hospital system, patients were not coming in. All elective procedures and surgeries were canceled. So there was this massive immediate effect on reimbursement potential and how that would affect revenue cycle management. What kind of work does VisiQuate do in this area to kind of help people through that? And what kind of advice were they providing to your customers?
Yeah, that's a great point. When the pandemic really initially, and I remember it was, you know, I took my last flight out to Chicago and came back home, and I was like, okay, we're done flying for a little bit. The world kind of changed. And with that, there was just a flood of information that was coming in, and not all of it was clear, not all of it was accurate. So what VisiQuate really did from the beginning was just acted as thought leaders. And we sifted through the CMS materials. We sifted through what we were hearing from our clients, what we were hearing from the intermediaries. And we're just providing almost game time, real time information to them. So it may have been on the day that we found out what the coding standards were going to be and identifying those DRGs, identifying the procedures that were going to be affected. You know, we were out in front and communicating that to our clients. From a technology standpoint, we were modeling that data basically in real time as well. So in our solutions, we're a workforce performance, we have workflow, we have analytics on top of the data that's coming in from our clients. So we had a plethora of information to work through. Now we had to kind of shift gears and focus on the things that were being affected by COVID. So we were plugging in those new DRGs, we were plugging in those CPTs, and we were, you know, basically date stamping them for the beginning of that period. And, you know, as you know, CMS kind of moved the guardrails back a few months. So we were, you know, retrospectively looking at those same instances for a longer period of time. So, you know, we really honed in on service line adjustments. So accounting for those elective procedures that were falling off the radar. We were also following ED and seeing how the emergency departments were being affected. And then, you know, working with our clients to see what that positioning of the long-term play was going to be. So how can we look, okay, well, we dropped off by 20% this month and the next month, how are we going to retain that, or I guess reestablish that growth and get back to a new normal?
You know, one of the things that was so sudden in all this was the once the pandemic had hit, we had the declaration of a national emergency. All of a sudden, a lot of telehealth reimbursement codes were modified to parity with face-to-face encounters. Mm-hmm. And there was also the relaxation of enforcement of some HIPAA regulations. So that kind of kept things, what was acceptable the month before, all of a sudden you didn't have to meet, you know, again, some of those protections for, as long as you act in good faith for protecting health information. But we don't know how long those relaxations are going to be enforced. We don't know how long those coding modifications or reimbursement are, whether they're going to last beyond the end of the declaration or not. So that type of timely information is pretty critical. And we know, we don't know what that information is, but we know it's coming. It's got to be acted on accurately and quickly. So
Jimmy, yeah, that's a good point on telehealth. There's been a push over the last few years. Well, I guess more than a few years, but there has been a push towards telehealth medicine and how that's going to impact our industry. Interestingly enough, when I was speaking with some of the leaders, some of our client leaders, they were actually getting some information back that was kind of interesting. And that was that the actuaries were looking at this a little bit differently than I expected or some others expected. You know, we thought it would just be a one-to-one reimbursement, right? It's a one-to-one replacement for those in-the-office visits. But what the actuaries were saying from a reimbursement standpoint was that they're actually seeing it as a complementary service rather than a complete replacement. So that kind of shifted at least my mindset on how we looked at telehealth. And I don't know if that's, you know, that's a point or maybe a small, you know, trend there, or a localized trend, but that's something that I've been considering and keeping an eye out to see how those reimbursement models are going to look long term, you know, maybe after the relaxation of those rules that went in place.
Yeah, we're definitely in transition to something. There's no doubt about that. I've been involved in healthcare for a long time, and usually you can see new rules and regulations coming years ahead of time. And there'd be time for public comment, and then a interim final rule, and then a final rule, then modified by regulations. This all happens so suddenly. Let me ask you a little bit more about VisiQuate. Who are your customers? Are they hospitals, hospital systems, large practices? Who do you provide your services to?
Yes, across the board, and we're also involved in telemedicine, but more on the device management and long-term management of client patients. Our primary focus is on the acute large systems, mid-sized systems, individual facilities, academic medical centers, really providers in particular is where we're focused our attention on.
Sure. The blog post I mentioned that I had read of yours was really fascinating. And for anybody who hasn't read it, it's available at the VisiQuate.com website. But you really outlined that there's a clear opportunity here, that we're not just trying to get this behind us and get back to the work style 2019, that there is a new normal that was compressed in time by COVID-19. And you gave some suggestions for healthcare providers and leaders who want to get ahead of this. And there's five major areas. And so if you don't mind, I'd kind of like to tick through those and have your comments on them. The first is invest in your team. What do you mean by that, Sean, invest in your team?
I think one of the most important things that we need to understand is that the human capital, your workers are your most important asset within an organization. So what I mean by investing in them is they have to first understand that you care. And now, especially when you're not able to walk the halls and, you know, hover management, if you will, there's a tendency to micromanage, and there's a tendency to overcomplicate what should be a pretty natural transition. If you trusted that person to do their job, you hired them to do a job, and now they just happen to be in a different location, you can still trust them. You know, providing them the resources, the flexibility to do their work, I think is key. And especially and now when the work from home initiatives are taking root, there's going to be organizations who are more flexible, more adaptable to that new situation than others. And that's going to provide the employees some leverage to go from organization to organization to fit their best needs. So I think to be proactive, organizations can invest in those employees, spend time understanding what their unique challenges are, what their unique situation might be, and have some understanding. Give them the flexibility, give them the trust to do their work. And what I found is if you may not be able to incent them with money, but if you give them some additional authority to make and pave their own way, that's going to give them empowerment to do more work and do better work.
You know, one thing about talking about a healthcare team, this situation that we're still currently going through definitely has created new opportunities. We, before 6 months ago, I'd never really heard of a position called telehealth coordinator. Now, every large practice, well, certainly every hospital, but every large practice, there has to be one go-to person who's familiar with best practices and lessons learned. And that includes everything from the technology to how to let patients know and you know that this service is available.
Yeah, absolutely. And when the shift in the resources that are out there, you're finding some new specialties, you're finding some new people who are really elevating their game and filling the void. And I think that's the important thing. Yeah. You know, as healthcare changes, and it changes daily, monthly, yearly, it's nothing new to us veterans of this space. What you're seeing is opportunity for people who are thinkers to fill that void that the pandemic or the change in healthcare has made, or the shift to telemedicine has made, and now organizations are finding that valuable. And you know, investing in the people who are leaders and are stepping up and stepping up their game is essential to the growth of the business, the organization, and really to the industry.
You know, your next point really spoke to things within your blog post is the concept of keep it simple. And I've worked in hospitals, I've worked in large practices, and many of the workflows, whether it has to do with admission or triaging or referrals, those processes have been developed over, you know, thousands of instances of what works, what doesn't work, over years and sometimes decades of time to streamline and come up with a process. All of a mm-hmm. sudden, we got to come up with new processes. And so it sounds like we don't want it to be too complicated. There's got to be some simplicity in this going forward.
Exactly. And in many ways, even with those thousands of combined thousand years of experience and putting together those processes and streamlining things, when change occurs, it's a good time to look at those and maybe pull out some of the things that don't make sense anymore. Instead of layering on top of existing processes, it might be as efficient or more efficient just to take some of the things out. And when I think about keeping it simple, I like to look at it almost like a supply chain, right? You go from point A to point B, you have to create a product and deliver a product. Same thing happens in healthcare. You know, we have, you know, from pre-reg all the way through the final disposition of the account, it should be a straight line. But what we really see is a lot of fluctuations, a lot of anomalies, a lot of defects in that process. So it's not a very efficient thing. So the more we can take out that slack, take out the inefficiencies, to keep the processes simple so people can understand them, and probably the best way for a leader to know that their message is getting across is to have the employee or the staff repeat it back to them in their own words. And if they take 30 minutes to explain something that should have taken two, then you know you haven't kept it simple. So it's time to go back to the drawing board and really just lead with the intent of your message and let the employees, again, taking responsibility, come up with the most efficient way to do it.
Another point you make, Sean, is prioritize and execute. And one example that immediately popped in my mind was how literally in a one-week period, telehealth had to be accomplished. People had to find the technology, scheduling had to take place, providers had to be taught how to use it, all these details, documentation, how the billing could occur, all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And so this new thing that's just dropped in the lap that had to be done, there had to be some way to prioritize the task. I mean, that was like a prime operative thing had to occur, and somebody had to break it down and execute it and get it up running in a matter of a week or two.
Exactly. You had so many different inputs coming in. You had service lines who were hemorrhaging because of their elective procedures are being eliminated. You had hospital leaders and executives who are juggling a lot of different competing interests. So the effective organizations and the effective leaders were the ones who could kind of step off the firing line, if you will, and kind of observe what was happening, take immediate inventory of the things that needed to be done, and to, again, going back to the second point, is simplifying the high value things that need to be done and done immediately. And that's when you saw people walking out the doors on basically day two of the pandemic. They were walking out of the doors with desktop computers, cables and all, and, you know, all matters of different things. Well, because they knew they had to set up that virtual network. They got the infrastructure in place. They had the docs in place. I mean, I had a dermatology, or no, it was an allergist appointment, and we did a Zoom call. I mean, if you invested in Zoom back about 6 months ago, you're doing pretty well for yourself now. It was amazing how the infrastructure, the leadership, and the technology all kind of came together in a matter of about 10 days to prioritize what was important for them to stay afloat and then execute. And I mean, I'd argue that he executed pretty well.
I think he did too. It was a crisis, and each hospital, each practice had to do it their own. There wasn't time to have meetings and go to conferences and learn how to do it. People just had to do it any way they could. Your fourth point you make is around the aspect of to distribute responsibility. Is this kind of what you talked about when we were talking about investing in your team, to trust your team? And
I think that's all these things kind of work together in a leadership capacity. But distributing the responsibility, I think, really comes down to leaders can only do so much. If they try to do every task, they're going to fail at some point. They have to trust that the people that they've hired are smart enough, capable enough, and have the same type of drive that they do. And I think when folks come back with that understanding, you know, leaders come to that understanding that their employees have the same amount of job satisfaction from doing a good job that they do, then they can see that they can trust that employee to do the work. And pushing that downstream, you'll get a lot of innovation from that. You'll also get a lot of stickiness for that employee. So they'll be more engaged for the success of the organization. There'll be a longer term fit for the organization. And ultimately you'll get a more, I guess, innovative, more happy workforce than you would otherwise.
I like that term, stickiness. And I guess that's part of where you talk in your post about incentivize. You think of incentives being purely financial, but there are other incentives of people liking the work they're doing. They like the work environment. They like how they're treated.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, within VisiQuaid, and I'll just kind of give a plug for our culture, we had to change as well. And we went from being in offices and somewhat remote as well to doing web conferences and go-to meetings and such. Every Friday now we have a virtual happy hour where, you know, for the first 15, 20 minutes, we're giving virtual shout outs saying, hey, great job, you know, Janet, great job for doing, you know, this particular work on this client, you know, that really made an impact. Sometimes it's as simple as, you know, a word of encouragement. Sometimes it's not always about money. That, you know, $50 gift card only goes so far, or that $50 bonus check probably goes to pay a utility bill and doesn't necessarily resonate and have that long-term impact that a lot of people might think it would. You know, at VisiQuaid, we're actually leaning into the idea of experiences. So rewarding people with, you know, a weekend stay at a hotel or something like that.
Yeah.
Or here's a cocktail hour, you know, here's how, you know, how to make a particular cocktail or something like that. It's just something that you can share with your friends, family, and yourself.
Yeah. I like that more than just, money is nice ever since it was invented by the Phoenicians, I believe. But
that's right.
But something that, can be shared and experienced with family. So, you know, your family can, you know, benefit from it. How can folks, before we totally run out of time, find out more about VisiQuaid, what you do, how to contact you or the organization?
What's certainly. The best way? You can find us at VisiQuaid.com. That's VisiQuaite.com. That's our main webpage. You'll find on there a lot of information about what we do and how we do it. You'll also find some plays, you know, our playbook, which is kind of leading practices that you as clients or non-clients or prospective clients can look and learn some of the things that we talked about today. And we can also reach me at Sean, that's S-E-A-N dot Kirby, K-I-R-B-Y at VisiQuaid.com. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. As soon as we're able to get back on the show circuit, we'll be happy to meet with you and greet with you at HFMA. We're also going to be spinning up a daily show that's kind of talking about leading practices in our space. So I'd be happy to have you there. It's called the Daily Swoosh.
Okay. When's that going to start?
We're in production right now. We hope to go live with that probably in the next week or two.
And we can find out more about details on that at the VidEquate website.
That's right. And in fact, we'll live stream it on there coming up pretty soon.
Great. Well, to our audience, thanks for joining me on this episode of Tank Chronicles. I offer a special salute to my guest, Sean Kirby of VidEquate. Sean, thanks for coming aboard today.
Jim, it was an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate the time. It was a fun conversation.
Thank you. You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.
Tate Chronicles transmission ending now.